Serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Sim Deming is our guest today. Like many of the veterans you hear on this program, he was initially hesitant to share his story. I don't know about you, but I'm thankful he decided to take us back to his World War II experiences today. We've heard about his time on the USS Arizona, leaving that ill-fated ship about a year and a half before the attack on Pearl Harbor. He told us about the shell that came through the bottom of his F-5, the unarmed reconnaissance version of the P-38 Lightning, and he even described the head wounds that left him with. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find photos of Sim in the Navy, in the Army Air Corps, and his favorite photos, the ones with his late wife, Mary. The photographs he was taking from the skies over Italy on April 3rd, 1945 would never be seen because he was shot down by German forces. And we're going to hear that full story now. Was it an enemy airplane that got you, or was it from the ground?
I would say it's from the ground, because normally the fighters, you see them coming and you get out of there, you know. But
yeah.
But the ground fire is another story, because you could be flying along there and all of a sudden the ground, the sky is just black. You could be flying along there and all of a sudden the ground, the sky is just black.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it's from the ground.
So are you at... You're up there at 25,000 feet when you got hit?
Yeah.
Tell me about it. Tell me what you remember about that day.
I think the first thing I did was just kind of rolled out of there, and then when I got down maybe 10,000 feet, I just bailed out.
So you knew instantly that you were hit badly you weren't going to get back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, when your engines quit running.
Both of them stopped?
They sputter, you know.
So you know you're in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
You can't keep going like that for long.
You don't argue with them.
And had you prepared yourself for this happening sometime? Had you considered the possibility?
I don't think you do, no. How can you prepare yourself for something like that? And you know, when it happens, everything happens so fast that you're not scared. You don't have time to get scared. Afterwards, now, that's another story. When you and I are sitting around having a beer the next day, That's when your knees go.
If you're around to do that.
That's a big if.
So, you're shot up. Your engines are sputtering. You realize you're going to have to bail out. But you've never bailed out of a P-38 before.
You don't bail out of them, because if you do, there's only one way to get out of them. You've got to roll it over and drop out. Otherwise, you hit that tail piece.
Right, because if you just go over the side, by the time you come down, the tail's going to be caught up.
That's
and it's
right.
going to slice you in half.
And then you don't need to worry.
That's right. Put you out of your misery right there.
Yeah.
But, so what I'm after, had you ever practiced that before? Have you ever practiced?
Oh, yeah. Yes, we did practice it, but it's so different. They put a mock airplane up here 50 feet in the air.
Uh-huh.
There's a tower there, and some way they've got cables, and you jump out on these cables. That's supposed to be your practice, and you have to take so many jumps out of there. Nothing like what you go through at all.
So you turn your P-38 upside down.
You drop out and count two or three and pull the cord.
And are you clenching your teeth and closing your eyes while you do this?
I don't remember what I did.
I mean, I can't imagine being in that situation. And are you still over enemy territory?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of a big deal.
I landed right near a haystack. And somehow, and I don't know how I did this, but I got in there and got covered up. And they were all around me, but they didn't find me. And then that night, I just sneaked out and went across the lines and went home.
So this is in Italy?
Yeah.
And this is during daytime when you're coming down?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you're floating down. That must have felt like a long time coming down.
Oh, my God, it just forever. Yeah. They're nasty people. They shoot at you when you're going down.
You were getting shot at?
Oh, yeah.
So you're coming down in a parachute in broad daylight. In enemy-held territory, and you hear and see bullets coming past you.
Yes.
How close do you think they came?
Oh, I don't think. Look, you could hear them, but I don't know. How close do you could you hear a bullet? 20 feet? 10 feet? I don't know. I don't think they were close.
Did you think you were going to survive this?
You don't think of it. You don't have time to think. You're thinking about where are you going to land and how are you going to hide.
Yeah.
That's what you're thinking about. I buried in there, and they looked for me there, but they didn't find me.
So you come down, you take off your chute, You climb into this haystack. You drag your chute in there with you, I'm sure.
Yeah, cover
it
up.
You don't want to leave any evidence. And you say they were looking for you. How do you know?
I don't know. I stayed there a long time, and I know it was dark when I came out, and there was nobody around, so I sneaked back through the lines. And
when you're inside that itchy haystack, I'm sure it was itchy.
Well, you know, I don't remember that.
It had to be. Can you see anything?
Oh, no. It's blacker than Hades.
But you can hear stuff.
Oh, you can hear stuff, yeah. I know they were poking me with bayonets, but they didn't reach me, thank goodness.
So you hear voices.
Yeah.
And you hear the hay rustling, and you're imagining they're trying to see if anything's in there, stabbing you with the bayonet on the end of the rifle.
I'm sure they were poking at me, but I guess I was in far enough it didn't reach anyway.
And you're laughing about this. But you understand, anybody who's listening and is trying to put themselves in your shoes is scared out of their mind right now.
Well, what good does it do to cry about it, you know?
What were you doing inside of that haystack?
Well, you dig like hell.
Just trying to get as far deep as you can.
Yeah, then you try to be quiet because you know they're looking for you. So.
And is it hard to breathe?
No, it wasn't hard to breathe.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Are you thinking about Mom and Dad back home?
No, the only thing you're thinking about is how am I going to get out of here? I don't know how long I laid there. Quite a while.
Hours?
Yeah.
Into the night?
Yeah. Come out and look around. There's nobody around, so you just take off.
Well, I imagine that. I mean, just for me, maybe you're immune to this, but for me, that would be awfully scary to come out.
Well,
not knowing
are.
What's out there.
You are, because you don't know what's out there.
And how'd you know where to go?
You have compass.
And you had known from your briefings, you know where, what you're photographing. You have a general idea of where American forces might be. So how far you think you had to go to get back on the American side of the lines?
Oh, I don't know, maybe a mile. That's kind of hard to say.
So you're doing this in the middle of the night?
Yeah, it seemed like it took a long time. Maybe I was being too careful, or I don't know.
I don't think you can be too careful in a situation like
that. But
there
was nobody around, and that's what surprised me, because they knew I went in that thing. It's a wonder they didn't burn it.
Good point.
You know?
Good
really.
Point.
Yeah.
They could have lit it on fire in a hurry.
Yeah.
At some point, you finally see an American soldier.
Yeah.
I bet that felt pretty good.
Yeah. The thing that made me mad, though, is somebody had already taken my billet when I got back to base.
How long was it till you got back to base?
Probably a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
You know.
So they figured, hey, his plane went down, he's a goner.
Yeah, they knew I wasn't coming back.
I know you can laugh about it now, but it's an amazing story, isn't it?
It is, I guess, yeah. Different.
So if you can survive that, you can survive anything, right?
Sure. That's why I'm still here.
I guess so. 97 and going strong. And I don't want to only ask you about those two missions, the Purple Heart and the time you got shot down. Were there some other incidents that happened in some of those flights that stand out for you?
I got to tell you a funny one. This one time I come back, there's a big lake out there we flew over, and there was a guy out there fishing. Well, you know, you should do things like this, but you're all tied up in a knot. And I thought, well, I'll go down and buzz that guy. Well, I scared the pee out of him, you know. I felt so bad about it afterwards.
Did he fall into the water or anything?
Oh, yeah. He jumped into the water. Well, I'll never forget that, because he heard me coming.
Sure.
And he threw down. And then I felt like a damn fool.
Conscience wouldn't let you live it down. How about this? You're out there flying all these unarmed missions, taking all these photographs, getting shot, putting your life in danger. What have you been able to figure out since, as far as what those photographs were used for or what they meant to the cause?
The only thing I can hope is that they did some good. Other than that, you know, that's the only thing you can do, is hope that it helped get the war over and kept other people from getting shot.
Well, and you say that, keep other people from getting shot. Did you lose any friends over there?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You don't like to think of it, but you do. Yeah, you lose people.
So what did it mean to you when Germany surrendered?
Just relief, I guess. It's over with, and let's go home.
And I know that you have a lot more experiences after World War II, but just when I think about what you've shared with me here, and I'm looking, and your son Paul is sitting 6 feet away here. You've got two sons, four grandkids, four great-grandkids. If you're still on the Arizona, they're never born. If that shrapnel inside your cockpit is a couple inches off,
yep.
They're not here. If they burn that haystack or catch you at any point in that incredible survival story you shared, being shot down, none of these people are ever born.
That's right.
How do you explain all that?
Fate. I guess everything is already arranged ahead of time. I don't think we have any control over it. So whatever the old man's got lined up for us up there, that's the way it's going to happen.
And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I mean, it's your story. It's your life. Is that how you see it?
Yeah.
That somebody was pulling the strings for you?
Yeah.
Hard to explain it otherwise, huh?
How can you explain it?
And I guess that was the other question I had about your time in the haystack there that must have been so memorable. When you were in there, I mean, is that something? Did you sit there and pray? God,
oh,
help me survive this?
You pray. You're darn right. Anybody that's been through that and don't pray, you'll never convince me of that.
Here in this part of California, we don't see a lot of those big haystacks. You might see them baled in the field or, you know, the yellow butterflies coming out of the alfalfa.
Yeah.
But if you see a haystack today.
I haven't seen a haystack in years. You know, really.
You think if you did, it would trigger some memories for you?
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
But you wouldn't go crawling in, necessarily.
No, well, I wouldn't go in there to see what was in there.
There might be an American flyer still hiding out in there. So the war's over, and I'm sure you could have gotten out if you wanted to.
By that time, I had so many years in, I figured I might as well just stay and retire.
So what kinds of things did you do after World War II?
Well, I instructed, taught school.
What were you instructing?
AT-6s.
So you're training future fighter pilots.
Yeah.
Who went over to Korea and Vietnam. And you never met a plane that you liked better than the P-38? Because they've come up with a lot of planes, you know, since then.
No, I don't think so. It was really a wonderful airplane. There was no torque to it. It did what you wanted it to do. You know, most of your, well, like your single-engine planes, you've got to have one leg stronger than the other. There was no torque in them or anything because they were counter-rotating props. It was just a beautiful airplane.
Did you feel like it was almost an extension of you?
Oh, yeah,
you do. And you could control it that easily?
Yeah, yeah, you do. You did. That's a good thought. You do. You just feel like you're just one.
When's the last time you flew in a P-38?
Right after the war. Long time ago.
Close to 70 years.
Yeah. I think I can still fly it.
Not too long ago, you got to fly. You weren't in the cockpit, and you had several dozen other veterans with you going to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight to see the World War II Memorial. What was that experience like for you?
Being back there was wonderful. We really got to see some wonderful sights.
And one of them was the National World War II Memorial.
Yeah.
Where they've got 4,000 gold stars signifying 406,000 Americans who died. You knew a bunch of them who died on the first day of the war on the Arizona.
Well, you know, you just have to forget that. You can't dwell on stuff like that.
What did you think about while you were there?
Well, I guess I just kind of in awe.
Did you find yourself thinking about some of the guys you knew?
You do. Yeah. Absolutely. Some of your real good buddies, you know, yeah. Especially guys that I was in the Navy with. Not so much the Air Force because you're not that close to anybody.
You're 97. You've got a lot of history running around up in that brain. But most of the people alive today were not alive for World War II.
Yeah.
What do we need to know about it? What do we need to know about what you guys did and why you did it?
Don't get in another one. I think that's the big thing. I think that's the whole story. If we just keep people up there in Washington that aren't warmongers, there's got to be better ways to settle things than the way we did it.
I don't want to forget to thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us a pretty incredible story that only you could tell us. Is there something that you would say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
For being here, I guess.
What keeps you going at 97?
I don't know the secret.
Is there some, like, raw local honey out here in Visalia you
I don't know.
Lubricate yourself with? Or?
Well, she slapped my face. Oh, no, you're talking about something else.
You still got it. That was pretty quick. That looks like they could land in, what's that, corn growing out there?
Yeah.
Some young corn?
Yeah.
Somebody landed in that cornfield in a P-38 and said, you want to take off on this puppy?
Oh, I could take it off. You never forget. I know I could.
What about landing it?
Well, I'm not sure my depth perception is that good, but
you'd come down one way or the other.
Yeah, I think you'd be. Where is that ground?
Well, to bring this show to our final approach, I want to bring in Mr. Deming's son, Paul, who sat in on the interview. What is it, Paul, about your dad's story that you find most amazing?
Just the tenacity that he's gone all through all of his life. There's never been anything he couldn't do.
Did he tell you these stories when you were a kid?
A little bit. It was never something that was easy to share.
I imagine especially his connection to the USS Arizona is one that would have been difficult for him.
Yeah, I don't think we dug out that logbook maybe 10 years ago.
So your whole life you had no idea he'd been on the Arizona?
Get little pieces of it.
And then the story of bailing out of the P-38.
Yeah, that one we'd heard about, and it was always like, man, you're just crazy.
I mean, doesn't that sound like something from a movie?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not supposed to happen.
No.
And again, I'm not trying to be melodramatic, but it's a real thing. If he doesn't survive all those things, you're not here.
Right.
How does that make you feel about him and what he's done and who he is?
Well, I just think that whole group of guys, they had a job. They weren't overdramatic about it. They got it done. Mm-hmm. And they kept moving. And, you know, the result's been that, you know, we all live in a pretty peaceful place.
And I asked him about the honor flight experience a little bit. You were his guardian on that flight. What did you get out of all that?
I was just amazed, you know, watching all of them together. You know, I'd never seen younger people that were so patriotic and coming up to all of these guys and really genuinely thanking them, going out of their way for what they did. You know, when you're close to it, you don't see that. But, you know, it was really impressive. Anybody that's even questioning whether to go on something like that, they've got to go. It's a fantastic experience.
And you say that about the young people, and it reminds me, you know, everyone assumes that this is only about celebrating the past, but I think it's also about informing and inspiring the future.
Right.
Anything else you want to say about this guy?
Oh, no. He's my best friend, and I'm just glad you were able to get down here and talk him into this.
Yeah. Good work. How much did you offer him?
We'll talk later.
Well, it's good to know that sense of humor got passed on to the next generation. Thanks to Paul and, of course, his father, 97-year-old Sim Deming. Check out those photos and videos at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And join us again next time when we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.